Welcome back to The Rush. It's Teddy Wilson and Richard Krause rolling with you until 6 p.m. And my, it's a good day for talk radio because there is a lot to talk about today. And right now we're joined by our smart speakers. We're happy to have them. Matt Gurney. He is editor of the online magazine The Line and columnist for TVO. And Aaron Morrison, a longtime political strategist and now principal at Morrison Comms. Welcome to you both.
Oh, hi.
Hey.
Hey, guys.
Let's start with the federal budget. We just had Jagmeet Singh, NDP leader, on. He is still not committing to supporting this budget.
I thought we had him, too.
Did you think that was going to be breaking news?
I thought it was going to be breaking news.
No, he still said they want to wait and see. But Aaron, let's start with you. From a comms perspective, how is this budget landing, do you think?
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. I think there's some things that we're hearing Jagmeet Singh say he likes about this budget because, surprise, surprise, there are things he proposed. There are things he forced Justin Trudeau to do. So, you're going to hear these things landing well with him and then him repeating it to his audience, which is things like free contraception for 9 million people, free diabetes medicine for 3.7 million people, school lunch program or school meal program so that, you know, it takes a little bit of the pressure, financial pressure off families and gives kids healthy meals so they can learn. These are good things. And the flip side of that is that no wealth tax, nothing that goes after the corporate giants, nothing that goes after the $60 billion in corporate handouts that the previous conservative government put in place. It sort of feels like Justin Trudeau and the Liberals sort of tried to kind of soft pedal, half please everybody, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I don't think it's going to be enough for them. And I'm hearing Jagmeet Singh and the NDP struggle a little bit with whether or not it's enough for them.
Right. And Matt Gurney, as you digest the budget, what are your biggest takeaways?
You know what? As always, I have the poor luck of going after Aaron, who already said most of the smart stuff. I think my instinct was very similar to hers coming out of this. And there are a couple of files I really want to dig a bit deeper on. I'm a weirdo for national defense, so I'm still kind of digesting the defense policy update. But just in the broad aggregate terms, I think Aaron has it right here. What we're seeing here, I would say, and look, I'm not wearing rose-colored glasses, guys. I know every budget is political, but this struck me as a little more political than normal. This is that the Liberals are kind of going, yikes, we're losing on a number of fronts. We have a lot of constituencies we need to try to offer something to, but they are operating within a constrained fiscal reality. So it's a little bit of an Oprah moment, right? Like, you get a car and you get a car and you get a car, but they're not great cars. Like, no one's actually getting necessarily what they wanted here, but they're getting something politically. I don't know. Like, it's something to offer them, but I think Aaron had it exactly right. Like, my assessment from the outside, and she might have heard better, is that the NDP doesn't really know what to do with this because it's not nothing, but it doesn't seem to be solving anyone's problems. And I think this is something we were actually talking about last week, guys, when Aaron was here with me. Sometimes governments kind of need to pick the few things they're going to actually commit on, whereas often the political impetus is to try and be all things to all people. This budget feels a little bit like that to me.
Aaron, do you think that this budget, as Chrystia Freeland says, is going to unlock the door to the middle class for more Canadians?
No, absolutely not. And that's its problem. That's the problem. There's nothing here. If you are a middle class Canadian right now who is, sort of on the hamster wheel, trying hard to get ahead, but the cost of your mortgage is crushing you, the cost of groceries is crushing you, the sort of everyday things are really piling on. There is nothing here that offers any relief. This budget does not go after the grocery giants. It does not go after gouging. There's no excess profits tax here. The idea also, I think, that the Prime Minister and Deputy Prime Minister Freeland tried to sell was, you know, this is for the Gen Z and millennials who really want to make it into the middle class. And it doesn't do that because it doesn't do anything on the price of homes. It doesn't lower rent. It doesn't lower mortgage prices.
And Matt, one of the big issues that has come out of here are the capital gains taxes. You know, right now, Canadians only pay 50% of the money they make from capital gains, which refers to profits made from selling an asset like a stock and that sort of thing. That's going up to 66% for all capital gains for corporations and trusts and that kind of thing. Do you think that this is going to force businesses, big businesses, corporations, over our borders and out of Canada?
You know, I want to not give an exaggerated answer here, because over the last 24 hours, I've seen both extremes being proposed here. One is that, hey, don't you know taxes used to be higher during the Second World War, you moron? This will have no effect on investment. Combined, on the other hand, with it will be a stampede of capital out of the country. It's not going to be either of those things. People who are already operating their businesses in Canada, especially if they're a small or medium-sized business, they will continue to do that because their kids are here, their home is here. Their life is here. The concern I do have is that there has been an increasing number of alarm bells being run specifically about capital investment, modernization investment, and overall productivity in this country. This isn't going to help that. I don't think it's going to make it an instant catastrophe. Again, I'm not trying to overstate the case here, but I think there had been growing calls for some sort of productivity focus in this budget. We didn't get that. And I will say, look, Richard, like I said, it's not going to be a stampede of money out of the country, but I do think people who might have money to spend, money is global, it can move very easily right now. There might be people who would have some money on hand. This might make them invest in that overseas project. This might lead them to put the money in that Florida development instead of the Ontario or BC development here. The politicians always want to live in a world where there are no negative consequences to their actions here. I don't think this is going to be a catastrophe, but I do think it will be a drag on investment in the economy.
Well, you know, a lot of the coverage of the budget is focusing on the new spending, about $53 billion over the next 5 years, and projected deficit. We're now looking at $40 billion for the next fiscal year. Do you think currently, and if not, at what point do these deficits, and I believe this is the ninth budget we've had from the federal Liberals since they promised some semblance of a balanced budget, at what point will these deficits become a losing political issue, or are we at that point already, Aaron?
I don't think it's deficit, balance, surplus that so much sends people to the ballot box. I think the question is, who pays for the deficit? And I think I'm going to disagree with Matt a little bit here. I don't think we're going to see a drag on investment. I promise this is all one point. I'm going to bring it back here from businesses, because in the US, the tax rate is going from the current 21% corporate tax rate, up to 28%, according to Joe Biden's budget. So now they're at 28%. Where are we? We lowered it to 15% under the previous conservative government. That means a conservative estimate of how many billions of dollars we have handed back to corporations. $90 billion, conservative estimate is $90 billion to date since that cut to the corporate tax rate. So I think corporations are going to look and say, oh, well, 15% in Canada and up to 28% in the US. Thanks. Yeah, I guess I'll be in Canada where I don't have to pay my fair share as much as I do in the US. And I think regular folks are looking at that deficit and anxiously looking around, looking at each other and saying, who's going to pay that? Am I going to pay that, or is Loblaws going to pay that?
Yeah, Matt, we're going to bring you in right after the break on the debt and the deficit. But before that, we are speaking with our smart speakers, Matt Gurney. He is co-founder and editor of the online magazine, The Line, and Aaron Morrison, longtime political strategist and now principal at Morrison Comms. It's Teddy Wilson and Richard Krause with you on The Rush. And when we come back, we will talk a little bit more about the federal budget. Will the deficit become a hot potato political issue? And we're also going to talk a little bit about bike lanes in Toronto. As you may know, there's a big plan to expand the number of bike lanes. We're going to see more and more in the next few months, and we'll ask our smart speakers what they think about that. We'll be right back. Ooh, great tune. Welcome back to The Rush. It's Teddy Wilson and Richard Krause with you till 6 p.m. And we continue to be joined by our fantastic smart speakers, Aaron Morrison, longtime political strategist and now principal at Morrison Comms, and Matt Gurney, co-founder of The Line, which is an online magazine, and columnist for TVO. So, Matt, let's start with you. We were talking a little bit before the break about the projected budget deficit that we saw as of yesterday. We're looking at about $40 billion for the 2024-2025 fiscal year. And I want to ask you whether or not this will ever become a hot button political issue, or if this stuff is just kind of too wonky for the average voter. Because I got to just say, like, as a taxpayer, the deficit number I find huge. It's kind of freaky. But I get really freaked out when I hear about the amount that we're spending to service the interest on the debt, which is going to be around $46 billion next year. And just to put that in a bit more perspective, that's more than the feds are spending on childcare benefits, and it's almost as much as they spend on healthcare via the Canada Health Transfer. So will this become a hot button political issue, or is it too much in the weeds in terms of details?
The answer to your question is yes. And it's going to be different answers at different times. This is too wonky for people to care about in the day-to-day sense of, I don't think a lot of people are driving home right now listening to us on the radio going, oh man, the debt to GDP ratio is just not what I want it to be. That's not how normal carbon-based bipeds, otherwise known as human beings, think. That's not going to be anyone's top of mind issues. But there is going to come a point that if we do not have some fiscal guardrails, that the debt and the deficit and then the actual servicing of the debt will start imposing limits on the government's ability to do anything else. One of the interesting things that I actually recently discovered talking with my friend Erin is that she and I are the same age. She wears her years better than I do, but she and I were born the same year. And one of the things that we had as an operating assumption for all of our adult lives, the time I've spent in journalism and that she has spent in politics, is that Canada was able to say credibly that we had an enviable fiscal position compared to our G7 partners. COVID started to change that. It hasn't totally changed it. I would still rather have our debt problems than, say, France or Italy's. But we spent probably about half of the available fiscal cushion we had just getting through the pandemic. So now we're going to have to make a choice. Do we start actually trying to put the books back so that we restore ourselves to the fiscal position that we had 5 years ago? Or do we continue to tell ourselves, as long as we're better off than Italy, everything is fine? The political impetus is always going to be to spend as much as you can because that wins elections. The problem is, if we had another COVID come along now, or look at the state of the world, a war, we would probably still have the fiscal ability to respond to one more COVID-sized emergency. But after that, we would be in big fiscal trouble here. So it's up to the government to decide what they want to do with that.
Aaron, we're going to shift a little bit away from the budget, but we're still talking about money in a certain kind of way. Dollarama has caught some heat online because an Ontario shopper says she was hassled for paying with coins. So the story is about 10 or 15 minutes before the Dollarama in a place called Georgina was about to close. A mother and a young son, a 10-year-old son, came in. He was allowed to pick 10 things, and he was going to pay with money from his piggy bank. And so it was a combination of rumpled up bills and coins. Now, ultimately, they took the coins, but they did it hesitantly. And the manager said that if they wanted to pay again with change, they wouldn't accept it as a method of payment at this time of day, i.e. 10, 15 minutes before they were supposed to close. I think it's kind of counterintuitive for a place with the word dollar in the title to suggest that they're not going to take coins. But what's your take from a comms point of view on this? Is this make them look a little miserly, a little unfriendly, a little less family friendly than they might have?
Yeah, bang on. It's literally called Dollarama, not credit cardorama. I think you're absolutely right, Richard. This is a communications issue. Obviously, some manager or whatever made a very poor decision by whining about a child using loonies to buy himself something cute, you know, treats or whatever. What really needs to happen now from a communications standpoint is Dollarama needs to get on this. Corporate needs to issue an apology and make it absolutely clear that little ones and their crumpled up $5 bills are absolutely welcome in that store at all hours of the day.
I think they should buy him a new piggy bank.
Yes.
And fill it with, you know, coins and invite him to come back and go on a little shopping spree.
Love that.
Yeah.
That'd be a PR win, I think, too.
It sure would.
Yeah.
Matt, new bike lanes are coming to Toronto. Lots of them. And there's been a little bit of pushback, but I think, generally speaking, as Torontonians, we're getting used to them. Do you want more or do you want fewer bike lanes in the city?
I don't know if this is going to make amazing radio or terrible radio, but what I want is to never have to think about bike lanes. Like, yep. The amount of my career that I have spent navigating the bike lane wars in this city is just completely soured me on it. Like, so my neighborhood is on the list of areas that is supposed to be getting bike lanes. I am totally fine with having bike lanes, but like I'm already getting asked by neighbors, do I want to sign the petition to add more bike lines? Do I want to sign the petition to have no bike lanes? This is just one of those issues, guys, where I just want the fighting to be over. I just want there to be peace across the land. Like, let's just figure out where the bike lane should go and put them in and then never talk about it again.
It will never end. This will never end.
I know, and that makes me so sad.
This is the kind of eye-level thing that people get upset about because when they leave their house, they can see it, they understand what it is, and if it's in any way inconvenient for them, it's an incredible thing to whine about and complain about on social media. This will never go away.
It reminds me of a great line delivered by the late, great Leslie Nielsen in the first Naked Gun. Every time I have to talk about bike lanes, I want to step up to a microphone and just say to everyone assembled, do any of you know how a man can hurt inside? Because that's what these fights do to me. But you know what? Like, Richard, you're right. It's catnip. Yeah. It's never going to stop being popular, and I'm just going to have to live with it.
And, you know, Aaron, I am both a cyclist and a driver, so I both love and hate bike lanes, depending on how I'm getting around on that particular day. But what are your thoughts on this plan? Because there could be a pretty massive expansion. This is pending city council approval. But the list of potential new bike lanes, for me as a cyclist, I even found pretty eye-opening. What do you think of the plan?
I think that the list doesn't mean it's the final decision, right? They're going to take a look at that. We have experts at City Hall who are probably going to whittle that down. But I think whether you are a driver or a cyclist, I get that bike lanes are a very minor inconvenience to some drivers. I also am a driver in this city, and yeah, they're a very minor inconvenience, but they save lives. In 2023, Toronto had 30 pedestrian or cyclist deaths, mostly pedestrians, but that doesn't even include the 905 and beyond. And the more we have infrastructure that supports vulnerable road users, people walking, people biking, people on, using mobility devices, the safer they are. So I don't know, like get over the inconvenience, I guess.
Matt Gurney, co-founder and editor of The Line, an online magazine and columnist for TVO, and Aaron Morrison, longtime political strategist and now principal at Morrison Comms. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
You've been listening to the Smart Speakers. When we come back, Teddy and I are going to have a look at some of the big stories of the day. We're going to talk more about the federal budget, but we'll use some clips from our interview with Jagmeet Singh. And also, Pierre Poilievre was in speaking with Jerry Agar earlier today. And so we'll talk about his reaction to the budget deficit and lots more. Former Air Canada employees among the suspects identified in a gold heist to Pearson Airport. We'll let you know what we know about that and much more. Stay with us. I'm Richard Krause. That's Teddy Wilson. You're listening to The Rush on News Talk 1010.